kind of playing football with you at one point.
And she got a little excited when he got close to the sergeant, threw you into the pillar after the actually a sleeping band protest where you were simply not even part of the
I was not part of that protest, no. I don't want to talk about that, Robert. I want to talk about the fact that now is the time for people to put on pressure. And by the way, any Greens out there, we need housing for people. I'm flooded with delegates that need beds. 429-5284. This is an emergency.
For women. For what? There's an event coming up?
This weekend is the Green Party State Plenary. It's delegates from every county all over the state coming here. We'll be at the, all weekend long, we'll be at the Student Center.
Well, maybe you can have them all sleep out on downtown Pacific Avenue.
No, Saturday night, that might be a possibility. Friday night, however, before they start their business, it'd be nice if they were sheltered a little bit.
I see.
Because we do want to be able to think. When you're homeless, you're supposed to be able to defend yourself in court when you've not even had a night's sleep.
You know, it's interesting. I know, you've probably been listening to the show, but I've
No, I actually haven't, Robert. I'm sorry. My phone has not stopped ringing.
Well, that's fine. We've been talking with people like Roxanne Cristofaci. I'm concerned that the city council majority we've elected, it's three, and I guess the fourth is Catherine Byers.
Yeah. And on some occasions, the fifth we will find to be Mike Rudkin.
Might be Mike Rudkin. Well, I know that, as I was saying, Mike Rudkin and City of Scott are going to be on the air in about 15 or 20 minutes.
Everybody, please call them and tell them what is the schedule for the repeal of the sleeping ban. What exactly is the schedule?
Right. I mean,
that's the question. Not when. You know.
Right. What?
Not if, but when.
Right. I mean, because as Roxanne Cristofaci just put it about 5 minutes ago, this law needed to have been repealed
yesterday.
And even if it's repealed on the, let's assume the best, and of course it's not going to happen this way, but if it were on the agenda on the 24th and was, you know, given a first reading and then given a second reading on the 9th or the 8th, then there would actually be a month's time before it would go into effect, but presumably the police would lay off because...
If they declare if they make an emergency declaration, they can suspend tickets and permit, That's what emergency declarations do. I think they passed November 10th, they passed the housing priorities and funding priorities, and also which included the actual fact that a minimum of 1,000 people in the city alone, and this is the county seat, so they're more attractive in the winter. In the city alone, a minimum of 1,000 people go without beds each night, because there's only 428, there's 1,500, sometimes 3,000. People coming towards the city if the weather gets bad enough.
That 428 number is not of emergency.
That's a
death.
Super max program.
That's a super max. There are less than 220 emergencies.
In reality, for people that are homeless out there. People that aren't already in programs and so forth.
Well,
I think, Robert, we have to be realistic. They're not going to do it the 24th. That's why, you know, I picked the 25th as the next level of my fast. That's when I go there.
Now, tell us about your fast. What's this all
I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want this to be blackmail, but I do want people to be conscious that we need to start purifying ourselves if we're going to fight this fight. And now we are really at the point where, you know, we won, now we got to get what was promised to us. And I've got the videotape, you know, every one of those candidates promised it. Catherine has been appraised and knows what the Kennedy negotiations produced, and she knows that what can go through staff. They also have the initiative that we worked on. They can put that on the ballot if they want to do that to us, or they can just pass the thing. Either way, they're going to have to do some emergency measures for the winter, and that's the opportunity to begin to repeal the sleeping ban. The success of this new council we elected will be based on the strategy of hitting the ground running. They've got to hit the ground running if they're going to get things done.
Well, thank you, David. Is there anything more you want to pass on to us?
429-3550, City Hall, push pound. You get all the city council candidates, repeal that sleeping ban. When is it going to be done? What is the schedule? 425-4920 is Bill of Voices from the Village. Call Celia Scott and Mike Rodkin and let them know what you think about sleeping ban and how it should be put on schedule. 429-5284 is my number. Call me if you have housing for Green Delegates.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
That was the mile a minute, David Silva, giving us, again, good numbers to call, 429-3550, and then the pound key to leave a message with the city council. Very good suggestion. Ask them what their agenda is for passing the sleeping ban. You know, they've gotten rather vague about the whole thing. Well, full of good intentions, of course, but rather vague about when they're going to do it. The problem with emergency measures is that you need 5 votes on the city council, and there are only 4 who actually have committed themselves to ending the sleeping ban. Rodkin, Matthews, and Hernandez are not in favor of ending the sleeping ban, even though they've claimed to be concerned about the rights of poor and homeless people. Now, maybe they can change their minds, but I think in the meantime, we have to go with those who have committed themselves. And that's why I think they needed to have that on the agenda on the 24th so it could be passed at the next regular session, which is the 8th, and then they go on vacation. If they're not doing that, then they better have a different plan that will enable some kind of emergency thing to go through, or else people are going to be out in the cold throughout the winter. And once the winter is gone, the pressure to change this law lessens considerably. So I think it's a real situation that we have in front of us. We've been given some promises by people who claim to be brought to power on the basis of accessibility, integrity, openness, and human rights. Let's hold them to the promises. And it's not a matter of criticizing them. It's just a matter of making sure they give us what they said they were going to, what we voted for them for. Now, kind of apropos of this, I had a long interview with the last caller, David Silva, who was one of the coordinators of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, and the initiative that we put out last winter and spring, actually started last autumn, in which we essentially decriminalized sleeping in non-residential, non-beach flat areas as an absolute guarantee, and then allowed the city council to, in essence, tell people who were in residential or beach flat areas that if they were caught sleeping, they would be told to move to a legal area. And the difference between that situation and the situation we have now is that there are no legal areas in Santa Cruz, period. I mean, you can, if you've got a van, you can sleep in a van on church property, and the few churches that allow it, three vans to a piece of property. Or you can go on the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which has 28 spaces, or perhaps they've gone up to 56 now, or perhaps you can get in the Armory, which gives you, there's an additional about 125 that can do it comfortably, or it gets crowded with 125. 100, I think, is crowded. And there are an estimated 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. And of course, there are plenty of people who can't use the services, couples, folks with dogs, vets who are outside, drunks, youth, all kinds of people can't use the services, and they should not have to suffer the incredible abuse of a ticket for falling asleep at night. And that's pretty simple. And we need to bring that simple fact home with protests on the 25th, and I'm going to start pushing them now because I don't think there's going to be anything on the agenda on the 24th, and I'll be able to tell you that for sure tomorrow. And on my show on Sunday, we'll be talking about that and how we can actually make some creative protests downtown that will draw the attention of the merchants and the city council to these issues. Again, a good idea is to call the city council and ask for the agenda in terms of the schedule, what they're going to be putting, when they're going to pass the sleeping ban, what's their master plan, what are they doing? You hear all kinds of things from, oh, we have to create a community consensus, to, oh, well, we have to wait till we're in office and we know what we're doing. Well, people's sleep can't wait, and this issue has been overly discussed. It simply needs to be acted upon. Let's hear a further discussion of this, since we've talked about it so much. Let's hear a discussion. We're going to hear a discussion now of David Silva discussing some kind of secret negotiations that happened between him and Scott Kennedy and Karen Gillette and Don Lane this summer. In his hope, it was a forlorn hope, it turned out, but he did hope that the city council, the old city council, would come up with an actual sleeping ban change that they could pass before the new city council came in. As it turned out, Scott Kennedy apparently sabotaged that. And let's get the this matter clear by listening to an interview with David Silva.
So you have been engaged in negotiations as the one of the outreach coordinators, the outreach coordinator for the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. You've put in a lot of time, hours, days, weeks, months, getting this initiative together to repeal the law that makes it illegal for people to sleep outside after 11 or cover up with blankets. And then the initiative fell short. Around that time, you began gathering together a group of people, the city council member Scott Kennedy, homeless community resource director Karen Gillette, downtown merchant Don Lane.
Well, actually, Robert, I went to the business community and I went straight to Pacific Avenue first. Don Lane's not only a businessman on Pacific Avenue, but he also is involved with the community, the youth opportunities, and he's a former mayor. And also, Don Lane is a friend of Chris Quinn's, who is also a part of the team, you might say, on
Chris
the
Quinn
other
side. New Leaf Market owner?
Also, they have a downtown association, president of the downtown association. Yeah.
So you went to these folks, and what did you say to them?
First, I just said, you know, hey, you know, Don, the one thing you had reservations about this initiative was that the downtown area would be, you know, a safe sleeping zone. People could legally sleep there without getting tickets, and you seemed to object to that. I says, what if we took that part out? I says, do you think we could get a broader based consensus, maybe through the business community and through the city council, and then get this passed as long as we obviously have all the public's hearts and minds. We've run the community on this. We have to do this initial drive all over, or what?
Because you indeed had gotten endorsements from CAB, SCAN, WILP, Peace and Freedom, Greens, almost every progressive group in town that matters, and yet, of course, the initiative fell short because of lack of person power.
Well, I think those all those endorsements, and there were many, many, many more than that, and thank you, Robert, for some of those out-of-time ones, many, many more that represented a wide range from, you know, progressive to community service organizations. But what was more important is that the response that we heard from those people that did the signature gathering, when they went, especially when they went door-to-door into the communities, was that the general population thinks that this law of sleeping is camping, therefore sleeping is against the law, is just a horrid law, and 80% of the people easily would have voted to repeal the sleeping part of the camping ordinance.
So you brought this this result to Don Lane's attention, and what did Don do?
Don then called together Scott Kennedy and other people that were concerned with this issue, former mayors and so forth, and we got Scott Kennedy to agree to meet with those that are friends of the Community Repeal the Sleeping Ban, different Quakers and Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the Community Action Board. We have Father Mike Marini always on hand to break any negotiation, a complete breakdown, or stalemate, or stag. But it was kind of a rocky start because the communication was like long coming, and I did have to do a lot of begging and crawling over a lot of email to Scott Kennedy for a long time for him, and also had to throw a few tantrums for him to realize that, you know, damn, I'm fucking serious here. You know, are we going to go back to the streets? Are you guys, I hear you understand you're against the camping ordinance altogether, and I understand that, you know, you think the sleeping ban is wrong, so, you know, what can you do? You anticipate. And finally, yes, he said, oh, well, you don't have to throw a temper tantrum. Yes, we'll be on the table. You know, we'll be at the table July 3rd.
And so July 3rd was your first meeting?
I believe July 3rd was the first meeting. We may have had preliminary meetings. You know, we had lawyers involved and different organizations. We had to take some people off. Linda Steiner was on it first, but because she was running for city council, I suggested that would be inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get any feedback from Linda Steiner about this process? Was she a party to it? I guess you kept the process very, very confidential while it was happening.
Yeah, while the process was happening, let's say the first, up to our first successes, were closed. They were secret in terms that those people that were sent to represent organizations were representatives that were not making reports until we had police and park ranger support or alternative offer. And Scott Kennedy continued through the whole summer, promised to get us that position. And you might say that...
But he never did.
You might say that he never did to our knowledge, although the city attorney may know otherwise. He did run this through the staff to get printed up a few times, the different versions. The problem with the process from the very beginning was that they offered us too much. They gave us more than we asked for, and I don't know if Scott was being friendly and giving us something to be a give back to the police and the park rangers or what, but it was kind of an unworkable kind of compromise. It made it so that there was sleeping and camping were distinguished, and there was camping areas, and there was sleeping areas, and there was non-sleeping areas, and it was not really, no zones were referred to, and no, you didn't know exactly what. It was probably not going to be good law.
Can you differentiate the plan that you had in the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban from the plan presented by Kennedy and, I guess, Karen Gillette?
Well, you know, let me say this. I've kind of characterized what we accomplished. But let me say this. I really hope that Father Marini can get the police to the table without Scott Kennedy. Scott Kennedy, I'm sure, is busy committing a crime, tearing down some posters right now, and that's what he was doing while he was standing up priests, lawyers, mothers with children, daycare, and people head organizations, and all the people that were sitting around the table with those faces looking at me saying, David, you know, once again, Scott Kennedy is not here, and neither are the police or the park rangers, and do they even know about it? I know the city attorney knows about it, of course, and I know most of the city staff knows about it because they gave us the printings of the new version. But I think we ought to give Father Marini the opportunity that what we had was really good, and we're willing to give...
What did you have?
I think that maybe even though the confidentiality has been totally broken by Scott Kennedy and the integrity of the negotiation has been completely broken down, I think let's just leave that to be out there, to be sabotaged. Let's see if maybe we can rescue some of that.
So you don't want to say what the plan actually is?
No, I want to say real bad.
But you feel it's inappropriate?
I feel it just may be inappropriate. Maybe Scott Kennedy was lying about the police and the park rangers, and I wouldn't want to betray the police and the park rangers if they've been used by him.
Okay. Well, can you distinguish between historically speaking, the plan that initially you came up with, or I should say perhaps Scott Kennedy came up with, and the plan that you initially had yourself as part of the sleeping ban repeal initiative? What were the differences?
Well, as far as initiative, there were quite a few differences. Initiative, we gave away a lot, and we compromised that. We gave the beach area, the business areas. We gave away a lot in all the residential areas to be regulated by city council to have more sleeping, perhaps. We kept very little for actual safe sleeping zones. In this plan, they told me that thanks for the offer of excluding the downtown, but that really wasn't a big issue with them. They were willing to take sleeping out of the camping ordinance for the entire city, everywhere. But then Scott was attracted to my concept, our concept in the initiative, that overnight vehicular sleeping in the residential areas, but that was public property. So the private property section of the laws, which is a specific, you know, especially offensive, that they regulate sleeping on private property. That part was that they could be in the driveways. Families who had friends that lived in that house, support systems would not be broken down. So Kennedy understood that this meant that friends and families could have people sleeping in the driveways without either one being criminalized.
He agreed with that.
He liked the idea, so he wanted to add it on. But if you've already taken sleeping out as a definition altogether of the city, why do you need to add it on? So he wanted to add on, and he added it into the camping section. Then he wanted to do the same thing with the industrial parks, and he added it into the camping section. So what he created was camping in driveways. And
Kennedy has always said he favors ending the camping ban. Maybe he was trying to go further than you in terms of allowing camping in certain areas. Did he talk about allowing tents and camping equipment?
Well, see, all that is already allowed in Section 2 in the camping permit.
Camping is permitted.
Yeah, the city council on any single one-month vote can create it, or any single official act of the city issuing a permit. In fact, I think the Parks and Recreation Commission alone could issue a permit that had some implications like that. If it had wide implications, I'm sure it would come before city council. So I don't think that you're adding anything when you allow that. This would have allowed, of course, would be cooking in uncontrolled areas like driveways and industrial parks. And I don't think that we were willing to go to risk losing police and park ranger support for that, but Scott Kennedy was.
Well, Kennedy, in a certain sense, was more radical on its face than the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban people.
Absolutely. That was the problem, and we were willing to go along with them. We basically just stayed silent. We figured they're going to give, we'll take, and we basically stood silent. And then as we went along, we saw that they gave too much, and that's when the lies and the standing people up and started with him. And I don't know what exactly it was, but I got the sense when it was all over that we were being used.
How many meetings did Kennedy actually attend, do you remember?
Well, Kennedy attended more than anybody else except me. Everybody missed some.
Well, how many meetings were there?
There were weekly meetings, through July up through last Friday, except the last Friday one was to be a two-week waiting period because there had been a three-week silent period of him not answering anybody's messages.
And he was supposed to bring the park rangers and the police.
Yeah, rooms. That time also. And the time before that, he had stood us up and apologies. And of course, Karen Gillette always seems to know when he's not going to come.
Well, what was Karen Gillette's role in this? I know we have criticized Karen recently rather heavily, some of us, for her support of Linda Steinau. What was her position and her failure to condemn the sleeping ban? In fact, she's been quoted in the Mid-County Post as saying that, the camping ban and the campground are somehow like the sleeping ban, and it's a magnet theory to bring everybody to Santa Cruz. Did that issue come up at these negotiations?
Well, it did come up in kind of a strange way. I guess you may say ego personality ways. Karen likes to have the absolute last word on labeling and characterizing different kinds of homeless behavior, different homeless campsites. She likes to have the right name. But she actually serves a small portion, well, not a small portion, but only a fraction of the homeless population. She doesn't serve the couch surfing population. She doesn't serve the people that camp. She doesn't serve the families that are in campers. She doesn't serve a lot of the population. She serves kind of, you know, the retired deadhead or the, you know, the ones that I don't know. I don't want to overcharacterize people. It's a set type of population.
Fraction of the population.
It's a fraction of the population.
But
she seems to think that gives her the authority to have the final word on the outcomes of lives of people that have been recently evicted, who she does not relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to think that it gives her the final word of so many things. And we catered a lot to that. And because of that, she got, people like Paul Brindell very afraid that this was actually going to be not helping anybody.
Paul Brindell on the Community Action Board was one of your members. One of the people negotiating.
Yes. He's supported the initial drive. He's been very wonderful to participate in this, and he brought a lot of actual facts and data, and kept reminding Karen and Scott of the actual facts and data. But he found the experience of Karen Gillette very deflating, and
can you be
always
specific how that happened. How was it deflating?
Well, the old theories about the sleeping bag was put into place to protect the homeless from getting criminalized or getting because they would, before they get only misdemeanors, now they got infractions. That kind of theory ends as well. Now maybe by taking this away, the police will really come down on them. So are we causing more damage? And Paul had very good concerns about those kind of statements. And she is a woman of some authority.
Did she have any logic or substance behind this process? Because
Not whenever challenged. Whenever challenged, she didn't have any logic or substance behind the process. What she would do then is do the I don't know, David, or I would just have to pick up the ball and say, what we're really here to do is to decriminalize sleeping. We're not here to do anything else. Whatever small, honorable thing we can do, let's accomplish that and know that we're not here to solve the big, big, big problem or all the problems. We're here to take care of this one injustice. And that's all we did at the very beginning is we had a mission statement. And our mission statement was that and nothing else.
And you got the city's staff and to actually print up a kind of a preliminary version of what you had hoped, what you finally decided on as the, assuming the city parks and rec and the police signed off on it, would be the agreement you came out with?
Yes, and we had that registered with our attorney.
Mm-hmm. And is that now a document that's open for the public to see?
I don't see any reason why it can't be open for the public to see. When we say now, not yet.
You worked on this weekly throughout the summer. And
there was a lot of every other week kind of happenings that happened because we try to get people there. There's some people that were part of it that were, these peacemakers for the court, what do you call these,
mediators?
Mediators for the courts. And some people that were there have, women's book clubs on the third week. So we try to get as many people there participating as possible. So that meant that we're meeting every week. I would say the average out to more like every other week.
What was Paul Brindell's contribution to this? Was he frequently there?
Paul Brindell was always there.
Mm-hmm. And what was his analysis of the final document?
The final document, he found it a little bit confusing because of the things I pointed out to him. It actually has camping, and I think he also would have liked to have seen a social service program put forward. And I reminded him that's in Section 2. Of camping permitted, social service programs are allowed in within that section, so it's already there. It takes the will of the council to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just thought that we really were just taken. We were played for fools. We were taken down the garden path, been over the log, and screwed.
Now, why would Kennedy want to have done this? Do you think that did he have this planned all along? I know you're not inside his mind, but what's your analysis of this?
Well, I do have an analysis of it, and it is strictly my analysis. I would say that this issue had become one of the top five or one of the top three issues of most of the progressive organizations in town. It was obviously going to be definitely on the campaign table, and I was going to be the person that made sure it stayed there. If not me, then you, and I believe I spent a good part of the summer dissuading you from a lot of things because I knew that we were in negotiations. So the result was that what might have been added up as several negatives on people like Steinau and Quartararo, actually they got passes on. So we gave them a whole summer of passes. Steinau, when we're really stuck in the middle, I'm not hearing anything from Scott Kennedy, thinking, we got a good deal, but where is he? She's telling me a lie about the language that, she's willing to take out all reference to sleeping. Her lie was that she's willing to take all reference to sleeping out because to solve the human rights violations. She would look at changing language. And then she said otherwise, and she's denying it. But she told me that personally. I think it perhaps had to do with her not attracting negatives in all these forums, because we kept it out of the campaign, and he fucked us over.
Mm-hmm. As certain individuals suggest.
My analysis.
And that last voice was that of Jane Walton, the forgotten candidate, as hopefully Steinau and Quartararo will also be forgotten. But now we have the good candidates. Good is in quotes, and hopefully not in quotes. Good. We will see how good the new council members are. You've been listening to David Silva and I discussing his secret negotiations with Scott Kennedy, Karen Gillette, and Don Lane, in hopes of getting, futile hopes it turned out, of getting a sleeping ban repeal in time for winter. And now, even though we have a new city council, the question is coming up again, can we get them to put it on the agenda? I've not been told by Celia or Catherine that it's going to go on the agenda, and frankly, they're the only ones from the old council who are likely to put it on so that the new council can vote on it on the 24th. So, your job is to call 429-3550 and tell them, after pushing the pound key, you want that sleeping ban repeal on the agenda for November 24th, or you want to know why it's not, and you want to know what their schedule is for making sure that people are not arrested over the winter for sleeping. As Chris Brozda, for example, found himself not arrested this morning, but banging, banging, banging on his van where he was sleeping. He came out, found two officers there, from two squad cars. Eventually four officers from four squad cars showed up harassing him for camping. And that's the kind of stuff that we just don't want happening in Santa Cruz. And that's the kind of stuff that this city council was elected to prevent. And I'm hoping that that is going to happen. But I frankly think it's going to happen if we make sure it happens. The same way that the old city council stopped its bulldoze the beach flats stuff, or at least has paused, and I suppose that the new council will continue that pause. They paused because we acted, because we raised our voices, and that's what we need to do downtown during a shopping season where the media, the merchants, the city council, the entire community is likely to hear us. We have to bring these issues up clearly and let them know that they're not going to wait until next Christmas or next New Year's, or 2000, or whenever the council feels comfortable with bringing up the issue. The council sleeps every night in beds. People on the streets don't. And the issue of civil rights cannot simply be played with so lightly. We have to bring that to their attention. And I've suggested, as I said, a clothes optional demonstration on the 25th, not because I think it's seasonable weather, but because novelty is an important aspect to any protest. We are hoping to make the society we're living in a freer society. And I also think that the merchants, well, who knows, maybe it'll draw a bigger crowd to downtown Santa Cruz and end up giving the merchants a big boost for their shopping season, which I think is just fine, provided people are also educated around the issue of the sleeping ban. And for those who want to help this protest, it's very easy if you want to join in. We need lots of people helping. We need people on the phones, on phone trees. We need people out there organizing at a homeless table every day. I've been out there a little bit this week, but not as much as I should be because I've got other things I need to do too. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833 off air. And if you have any comments to make, if you think I'm going too fast, give a call to 427-3772. On air, and we can talk about it as this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides kind of winds to a conclusion. I want to also remind you that as we are speaking, the live version of Voices from the Village from 7:30 to 8:30 on Channel 71 on television is on. You can call in, even if you don't have a television, to 425-4920 to talk about the issue of homelessness, which they are discussing. That is their topic. And who should be on that but those two big powerhouses from the old city council? Both of them, one of them will remain, one of them will leave. Celia Scott, who's leaving, and Michael Rotkin. Riotak Rotkin and Celia Scott. Say Little Celia, as I've called her in the past, for... Well, essentially, she sold out the folks on the Community House project, and that was a sad thing, and I've talked about that on the air a lot, but I've also given her a lot of credit for standing firm on other issues, and she deserves that acknowledgement as well. Now, earlier we talked with Roxana Kistapache, and I mentioned her fire-eating speeches at City Council. Here is the speech I was referring to, a speech even I would have trouble giving. I'm most impressed with her. Let's see if we can get past the questionable tape quality and hear Roxana Kistapache at the November 10th City Council meeting. That was the one the Tuesday before last.
Thank you, Council members.
Boy, you know, having said that, I realized that much as I liked the speech, I realized because of the time constraints, because we'd already heard Roxanne, I had to move to another speaker. I will try to play Roxanne's speech later if I have time. I don't think I will. Instead, I'll play the speech that summed up everything. Phil Baer gave a wonderful speech. It was the last speech of the oral communications period, a period I hope which will be expanded. That's what we need to also tell the City Council to do, expand oral communications, allow for a way for items to be put on the agenda by the general public, as is the case in Santa Monica and Santa Barbara. Let's hear Phil Baer.
I have a quick three-minute history of the last 10 years of the City of Santa Cruz. 10 years ago, things were functioning relatively smoothly after five consecutive elections, which had firmly established a form of populist, community-based city government that came to be known as progressivism. Then 9 years ago, the earthquake hit, and we entered a state of emergency. In the name of efficiency, decision-making turned from the community inward to an inner circle of council members, city staff, some big money interests, and some hired professionals. It was as if the more cumbersome process of democracy was temporarily, we thought, suspended to speed the recovery. And it worked in the sense that we are now, I would say by any estimation, fully recovered from the earthquake, but it has certainly proven difficult to put this genie of centralized government back in its bottle. There's obviously no exemption for progressivism in Voltaire's general truth about the corrupting effects of power. Neither this council majority nor the city staff has gracefully relinquished the state of emergency powers even after the emergency has long since passed us. The community, in fact, had to wrestle those powers away from people who had clearly grown arrogant and out of touch with the people of this city. That wrestling match culminated with the defeat of the beach area plan and even more emphatically with last Tuesday's election. Let me be clear about what last Tuesday's election means. It means that the attempted coup, the professionalization of city government, has been turned back and the people are once again in control of this government. Those on the council and on the staff who cannot accept this change in their position from unilateral decision makers to facilitators of the public will are going to find themselves out of a job. What we have now with these three new council members, or what we damn well better have, is not in fact some break with tradition. It is in fact a continuation of the tradition that goes back 20 years with the single exception of the aberration of the last few years. This tradition that of a form of government that the voters of this city have persistently endorsed and supported for 20 years. The lesson of this experience is that this vision that we share of a liberation form of government based in the community and extending back to the individual is very difficult to establish and very easy to lose. In fact, for the last couple of years, it's been quite lost. And all right, I certainly will. We just want to be sure that we all realize that a new phase has been entered and Santa Cruz is back, and we will never again make a mistake of relinquishing to the politicians and the professional staff the powers that we have learned the hard way must be retained by the people.
And you guess just who we are? One part business, one part war. We own the weapons, banks and land. Call us Armageddon Man. There is less, but we want more. So we take it from the poor. You can't stop us, no one can, because we're Armageddon Man. Karl Marx predicted our demise, but it's our own crisis that we drive. And find a new market or a war will do. And we'll see our historic mission through. Well, even though our race is almost run, when we are through, you'll all be done. And what we don't use up will blow away on that Armageddon day. Round the world we're number one. We'll win the war that can't be won. You won't survive it, no one can. Thanks to Armageddon Man. Thanks to Armageddon Man. Thanks to Armageddon Man.
And that was Thanks to Armageddon Man from Armageddon Man versus Fact Wino, a San Francisco mime troupe production of about a decade ago. Wonderful song. Before that, you heard Phil Baer speaking to the November 10th oral communications period of the Santa Cruz City Council. At the end of last show, we had a very eloquent woman, Becky Johnson, speaking on behalf of Sean Alimi at a memorial for Sean at that same November 10th City Council meeting. Right outside, folks were eating food and lighting candles, and there's going to be another memorial at 3 o'clock at the Veterans Hall on Saturday. I guess that'll be the 20th, November 20th. No, 21st. Today's the 19th, it'll be the 21st on Saturday. Everyone's invited, and I think to get into the spirit, I'd like to play that speech by Becky Johnson again, and perhaps a few more things that were said at that meeting. Again, we're talking about Sean Alimi, the man who fed the people with the organization Feed the People and fought the sleeping ban month after month, week after week, year after year. You know, actually kept calling me up and telling me you wanted to do another protest, and I said, you organize it and I'll be there. I was too tired. Now it looks like I should have joined him then. Well, I could have, because he was around then, and he would have been a real mainstay of that protest. We have to proceed without him in his memory on November 25th. We have to turn out. I suggest we start at the Host Center and spread out downtown from there. But we'll be talking about that in more detail at the Sunday Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, which will be starting at 11 o'clock this coming Sunday. And, of course, I'll be down at the Sean Memorial at 3 o'clock at the Veterans Hall on Saturday. Let's hear Becky Johnson talking about Sean Alimi.
Sean spent 7.5 months in jail up in Alameda County on a phony drug charge that there was no basis for it. Many of you know Sean. You know he didn't do drugs. You know he was not selling drugs. And he went to a jury trial, which ended up in a hung jury, and then charges were eventually dropped. So he did 7.5 months jail in Alameda for nothing. Then he came down here in Santa Cruz, and I guess it was this summer. He was charged with 15 felonies for molestation of two minors and providing drugs to them. Those were the charges that were put on him. Now, he claimed his innocence through the entire process. There was no evidence of it other than the statement of two teenage girls who Shavy and Sean had sort of adopted over a 48-hour period. And the police pressured those two girls to make false statements against Sean. And then the prosecutor picked those statements up and was attempting to prosecute Sean, not for any molestation, not for any drugs, but because he was feeding people on Pacific Avenue. And that is something the authorities could not stand. And that was how they reacted. Now, what happened to those 15 felonies? They were dropped down to 7 felonies. And the latest plea bargain arrangement between Sean Gallagher, the public defender who was defending Sean, the district attorney had offered to reduce charges to a single misdemeanor, a very minor misdemeanor, and Sean wouldn't accept that either. He said he was going to a jury trial in December and going to defend his honor because he wasn't guilty of anything. These are malicious prosecutions. It was just absolutely abhorrent the way the police department in Santa Cruz is being used to harass people who, like Sean, who are doing such good work on the street. You know, he was a homeless person. He lived in a van. I mean, how many people in these fancy houses around here could afford to come down and give someone a bagel or a sandwich or something? They don't do that. Instead, they call homeless people dirty and that they're litterers and that they're urinating all over the place. That's how the people, the wealthy people in this town, judge homeless people, and how the courts, the district attorney's office, the police, could vilify Sean in that way. And we all know Sean was not a villain. Sean was the very opposite of a villain. Sean was about as close to a saint as you can get walking around on the streets in Santa Cruz.
I think Sean was an angel. I do believe he's an angel.
His physical power, you could feel it when you went near him.
Good evening. My name is Kate Wells. I'll never forget the first time I met Sean Lemmy. It was in jail. I was in jail for sleeping. And I remember my first thought was, I was amazed that they found an orange jumpsuit big enough for this man. He was a mountain of a man, and it didn't take long before I realized that the reason he needed such a huge outer shell was to house this amazing heart that he had. How much he cared. I am committed to making sure that Sean did not die in vain, that his memory will continue on, and that the causes that he championed will continue on. Feeding the people and finding housing for people and finding safe places for people to sleep. I'm here to plead with you, to put the sleeping ban on the agenda for the November 24th meeting. Give the new council a chance to deal with this issue. We're facing a rough winter again. There are people who are hiding at night, who are afraid, not just of being arrested by the police, but of slashers and people who would, I mean, you know what's going on in San Francisco right now. People need a safe place to sleep. I have also set in motion today a Sean Alemi Memorial Fund. And my intention is, at this point, I want to tell you a little bit about Sean. Sean was not born in poverty. Sean was actually a member of the royal family of Persia. He fled Persia when the Shah was deposed. Was raised in England, well-educated. He saw a need, and he gave. And, it's just, no matter how many times his love was divided, it never diminished in any way. He was a special person. At any rate, in his memory, I ask you please to put this on the agenda and give them a chance to deal with this. It will be the last chance. If you don't do it on the 24th, they won't have a chance to deal with it before everybody leaves on vacation. So please, in Sean's memory. Thank you.
And that was Kate Wells speaking at the Santa Cruz City Council on November 10th. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides, a twice weekly civil rights show. I'll be back on Sunday. I invite you to call in now tonight to Voices from the Village, which has Michael Rotkin and Celia Scott supposedly talking about homelessness. Let's make sure they do more than talk, folks. 425-4920. Stay tuned for Uncle Dennis's show. And come to the Sean Alini Memorial at 3 o'clock at the Veterans Hall on Saturday. Join me again Sunday at 11 o'clock for the next edition of Bathurst Beers Broadside.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. It's time for Earth First Radio.
Here come chainsaws, kill the trees. Something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. But there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race. Oh, compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Mining mountains by the ton, digging up uranium. Bald eagle looking for a place to land.